Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytech, brings you Blowing Bubbles. Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world. How are people living their bubble lives? Working from home, keeping kids entertained, and staying connected and getting exercise. And how are these things presenting us with the opportunities to find new ways of living? Every weekday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann, Shane Gallagher, and Mara Karatai reach out from their bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world. Broadcast on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz and sustainablelens.org, bringing connection, joy, kindness and peace in the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin. And I'm joined from Whakatane by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Good morning, Sam. How are you?
I'm doing very well indeed. I spent the weekend reading Indian graphic novels. Would you like to ask me why?
Why did you spend the weekend reading Indian graphic novels?
Because I'm doing a keynote in India in December, and it's largely based on our decolonisation work. And it occurred to me that I should find some Indian stories to use rather than our ones.
Fair enough.
Because I didn't want to be the white person going to India and talking about decolonisation and sustainability and ethics. So I'm finding the story I want to use, and then I'm going to contact the author and see if they want to work with me on it.
That is very cool. I love that.
That and watching a friend run 170 kilometres around the Alps.
That's madness.
It's just insane. Her husband swam the English Channel last weekend. just to make us feel like whatever we do, it's not enough.
Yep. Those people are robots.
But they're nice people too. And who are we introducing today?
It is my very great pleasure to introduce my friend, Tamati Coffey. We have interviewed Tamati two other times. And it's so lovely to have you back again, Tamati. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me back. I didn't think I'd be back, but I'm back.
Yeah, you're back.
So, Tamati, we've been asking people for too long now, 3 years, how their bubbles are going. It's turned into a retrospective thing. Can you look back on it now and how was your bubble?
My bubble's bigger, actually. I think since we last spoke, we only had one child, scattering the toys and the Lego around the house, and this time we've got two. So that means more space for them, less space for us in our bubble, a constant maintenance of moving toys and guff and baby chairs and bumbo seats in whilst trying to move other stuff out of the bubble so that we can all coexist in the bubble together. But I wouldn't change a thing, and it is the most fulfilling experience of my life to have two little babies that rely on us, and that we have the ability to shape their minds and give them a really bloody good life for what we can control.
And I think last time we talked about, the thing that you're most excited about was your surrogate bill. How did that go?
Yeah, good. Except this pesky thing called the election got in the way. So we would have preferred to have rolled through with the entirety of the legislation. Instead, the position that we've gotten to is we have issued, as of only 2 weeks ago, the second interim report, which details all of the work that we've done to date, and kind of packaged it up in such a way that people out there in Aotearoa New Zealand that are interested in this topic can pick it up and see all of the work that's been done, seen the official direction that the government's looking to take in this space, and also teeing it up so that whatever the government looks like post the election, they will be able to pick up this piece of work, turn it into a bit of legislation, get back out there to the people to ask them to input on this, because there's a lot of people that are interested in this work, and then move it through the House, past the first, second and the third reading. So that's the hope and the aspiration. I wish that I could have been able to do this in this term, but I've taken the position, I'd rather do it once and do it right then rush something through that then needs a bunch of amendments to be able to fix it afterwards in retrospect.
It sounds like it's a thing that people wouldn't be opposed to, but there'd be a lot of detail.
There's always people opposed to things in politics. You'll always find those people, but that's okay. There are, in my experience, a majority of people who are nonpartisan. They vote every which way and are very supportive of this work. And it shows because the Health Committee, who have been considering the legislation, have cross-party support. And that doesn't happen often in Parliament. So when it does, you shout out and go hooray and pop the bubbles. So on this, we do have cross-party support, and that's really important.
And I was under the impression that you were retiring, and then you're not. What's going on?
I too was under that impression as well. And then things changed. So I put in my resignation letter in March, and the boss, Chris Hipkins, grudgingly accepted it, understood my reasons. We'd just had our second baby, and I decided that I wanted to focus on family. And then more recently, things changed, and they changed in our region as well. My friend and colleague, Kitty Allen, went through some issues a couple of months ago. It led to her resignation as a minister and as a member of parliament as well. And she's working through those issues. But it left a bit of a gap for a Labour candidate in the East Coast seat, which I know very well from having been a member of parliament in this area for 6 years now, and the other half of the seat is over on Gisborne, the Gisborne side from the East Cape down to Gisborne, and fortunately I have very strong whakapapa links over there as well. So yes, I thought I was exiting, leaving the building, and the universe had different plans for me. I got a shoulder tap, decided to put my hand up for it, and the rest is history.
And the whole area has had significant challenges.
To say the least, possibly the understatement of the last 6 years, everything from the Fekati eruption to the COVID pandemic to more recently Cyclone Gabrielle, our region has been battered. And despite that, the people are still hearty and still manage to go about their business and keep a smile on their face. But there's still lots more work to do in this region to get the East Coast mighty again. And I'm looking to be the representative for the East Coast electorate this election.
When you're going out and about around the region, and there's you see so many things that still need to be done, how do you present a positive mindset on that, I suppose, without coming across as somehow you've got a magic wand that you can fix everything?
Yeah, it's... You have to be, I've learned in this job over the last 6 years, that you have to have a degree of pragmatism, that actually you can't fix everything all at once. You have to, you know, mark things out. And even in the electoral cycle, we think about things in kind of 3 year cycles, and that I will, you know, if elected, only be here for 3 years until we have another election. So what can you feasibly do in that time frame is the kind of starting point for those conversations. So I based my my work in the reality of the timeframes that we have to operate with, and also not wanting to raise people's expectations over and above what is possible. But in that, there is still a whole lot of hope and aspiration that gets me through. For instance, just yesterday, I was standing in Tolaga Bay on the beach, where they are up to their eyeballs in slash, forestry slash, which has come down the rivers, come down the mountains, and is just there in great number. And whilst I could have got pulled down into how awful the slash is, they've had to pick a bunch of it up, move it over to some council land across the road. I saw an area where they cleared silt and they just dumped it in this big mountain. And you could get caught up in that stuff, and you definitely need to work on that. But then I also noticed that there was a family down on the beach flying a kite with a little Māori kid running around being free as a bird. And I just thought to myself, everything in perspective, right? Yes, get angry at this and do what you can do. Shake your fist at the Gisborne District Council. You know, shake your fist at the forestry companies that are slowly working to fix this problem. But also understand that the world is a beautiful place, and that we are not all living in doom and gloom. There are beautiful little moments of humanity that help lift me up.
Let's take the first of your music choices. Let's go with Hamilton, My Shot. Why this one?
Yeah, for those people that haven't seen the musical Hamilton, it's a great musical. You should go and spend some time. It tells the story of Alexander Hamilton, who back at the start of the States of America were fighting the British colonial forces, who had decided to impose tax on them, and he was one of the early revolutionaries of the American movement. And this song is called My Shot, and in it he talks about being an orphan, coming from a really hard background, but wanting to rise up and actually taking his shot. And it was a song that when I was weighing up whether or not I should be standing again or going home and focusing on my family, this song rung in my head. So have a listen.
I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. Scholarship to King's College. I probably shouldn't brag, but dag, I'm amazed and astonished. The problem is I got a lot of brains but no polish. I gotta holler just to be heard with every word I drop knowledge. I'm a diamond in the rough, a shining piece of coal, trying to reach my goal. My power of speech unimpeachable. Only 19, but my mind is older. These New York City streets get cold. I shoulder every burden, every disadvantage I've learned to manage. I don't have a gun to brandish. I walk these streets famished. The plan is to fan this spark into a flame, but damn, it's getting, so let me spell out the name. I am the A-L-E-X-A-N-D-E-R. We are meant to be a colony that runs independently. Meanwhile, Britain keeps shitting on us endlessly. Essentially, they tax us relentlessly. Then King George turns around, runs a spending spree. He ain't never gonna set his descendants free. So there will be a revolution in this century. Enter me,
he says in parentheses.
Don't be shocked when your history book mentions me. I will lay down my life if it sets us free. Eventually, you'll see my ascendancy. And I am not thrown away my shot. I am not thrown away my shot. And yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry. And I'm not thrown away my shot. I am not thrown away my shot. I am not thrown away my shot. Ayo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. It's time to take a shot.
I dream of life without a monarchy. The unrest in France will lead to anarchy. Anarchy, how you say? How you say? Or anarchy. When I fight, I make the other side panicky with my
shit.
Yo, I'm a tailor's apprentice, and I got job knuckleheads and local parentis. I'm joining a rebellion, cause I know it's my chance to socially advance. Instead of sewing some pants, I'm gonna take shit.
And but we'll never be truly free until those in bondage have the same rights as you and me. You and I do or die. Wait till I sally in on a stallion with the first black battalion, have another shot.
Geniuses, lower your voices. You keep out of trouble and you double your choices. I'm with you, but the situation is fraught. You've got to be carefully taught. If you talk, you're gonna get shot.
Bird, check what we got. Mr. Lafayette, hard rock like Lancelot. I think your pants look hot. Lawrence, I like you a lot. Let's hatch a plot blacker than the kettle calling the pot. What are the odds that God will put us all in one spot? Pop in a squad and conventional wisdom, like it or not. A bunch of revolutionary manumission abolitionists. Give me a position, show me where the ammunition is. Oh, am I talking too loud? Sometimes I get overexcited, shoot off at the mouth. I never had a group of friends before. I promise that I'll make y'all proud.
Let's get this guy in front of a crowd.
I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot.
Everybody sing! Whoa, whoa, whoa!
Yeah.
Let's go!
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
I said shout it to the rooftop.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
I said to the rooftop.
imagine death so much it feels more. Tamati, I was down in Gisborne this weekend as well. I went down with Jack and his dad to do some hunting pest management work on a block, actually not far from where you were at Tolaga Bay. But you know, I've done that drive so many times, and I was absolutely blown away by the damage that's been done. You know, and we're talking months ago now, but still, like, just slips and broken roads and broken everything. And it's a region that has, you know, it is so affected by climate change, will continue to be affected by climate change, and you're going to be the one that everybody looks to for solutions on how we're going to fix that. What are your aspirations for the region? How are you feeling about, you know, where we're headed?
Yeah, look, in response to your first point about the cyclone, you know, many of us are old enough to remember the last time the big cyclone passed through, and Cyclone Bola took out my grandmother's house. She grew up in Mangahaya in the old homestead. Bola took out that house and it caused devastation. It's been 40 odd years since then, and this is the next big event. Unfortunately, on the Te Rāwhiti, resilience is something that you have to know back and forwards, and it's something they've been through time and time again. So you can't control the weather, but you can control how you respond. And from what I've seen, the people that live up and down the coast, they are hearty people. They want local solutions to some of these issues, and we need to listen to their voice so intently as we talk about the impact of climate change and what the environment is doing. The people that are the expert subject matters in this space are the people who live and breathe in those different towns and cities up and down the coastline. And Māori communities are hugely impacted by this. I went and visited one of our marae over in Te Rāwhiti called Hine Mauria. And after Bola, they built a stop bank around the marae to prevent any future flooding. This time round, they could have and should have been protected, but they weren't, because the one little vulnerability in the stop bank was the mechanised gate at the Waharoa at the front, which was supposed to close and block any kind of flooding. It malfunctioned. So as a result, the water came through, the toilet block was taken out, and they have a big job in terms of repair. The local Māori families that live around the marae, who whakapapa to the marae, who whakapapa to the urupā that's there too, they have been red stickered, for want of a better term, but they have to work through those issues because many of them don't want to leave. They go, we had an accident here, there was a cyclone, but we're not going anywhere. This is our whānau land, and we will be here. We were here last decade, we'll be here for the next decade, and we will rebuild after this. So not everyone wants to move, but the best people to deal with those kind of challenges are the locals. And so I'm focused on really putting my ear to the ground and hearing what those people have to say, and making sure that I'm advocating at every turn for better solutions from the Gisborne District Council, from Parliament and government, who have the ability to put in big money into this. That said, we've already put big money in to date. Our most recent announcement in terms of funding for roads, $257 million, just to be able to fix up some of the roads on the East Coast. That's a lot of money. And yes, while there's a bit of devastation and a bit of parts of, you know, State Highway 35 where you have to go slow and there's Bailey Bridges holding stuff up, the good thing from the community's point of view is that the traffic can still flow, which means they are connected. And they're happy about that. And of course, there's more work to do, and I'll be an advocate for them. But for the here and now, just being connected is a really good start. But there are more opportunities. Just 2 weeks ago, I was at the aquaculture conference here in Whakatane, and the aspiration in the room was, you know, you could just bottle it up. There are huge opportunities in there with the Whakatohia settlement, with the Whānau Apanui settlement. They're looking at open fish farming out there in the blue waters. They want to do it sustainably and safely, but it has the potential to add huge amounts of jobs to our region. And I want to be an advocate for our primary industries, whether it's out there in the sea or on the land. There are huge opportunities for growth, for economic development, and I see it with my own eyes and I want to support it.
That's so good. It was really lovely to hear on the weekend the new Labor policy around free dental care being increased beyond our 18-year-olds up into our young adults as well. You know, I think about the impact of the horrendously expensive process of going to the dentist and how difficult it is to get young people to be able to go because they just simply cannot afford it. And I'm thinking that that's actually going to have a significant impact on a lot of lives.
Yeah, absolutely. People often joke to me about my megawatt smile. And they joke, I was called the Colgate kid growing up. Because I'm quite proud of my teeth and my smile, but actually it's not through any accident. It's been because actually as a young person, mum and dad were always very, very sure with us, look after your teeth. And the reason they were able to talk with such confidence is because they did a terrible job with their teeth growing up as smokers, as people that never visited the dentist because it was too expensive. They kind of impressed that upon me and my sister to look after our teeth and it shows. But I acknowledge that I've proactively done that despite the price that it costs to be able to go to the dentist and get teeth out. I remember one time I got all four of my wisdom teeth taken out at the same time. And it was in Auckland at a dental surgery in Herne Bay, which was probably the most expensive dentist in the whole city of Auckland. But, you know, fortunately at the time, I was only in my early 20s, but somebody had convinced me to take out some health insurance. And actually it was my health insurance that covered the cost of my dental because those four wisdom teeth, they cost about $8,000.
Wow.
And I would not have been able to pay for that normally, but it was causing me some pain. And the dentist at the time said, well, you've got your dental insurance, so let's take them all out. And so we took them all out. Of course, the health insurance paid. The dentist was happy, but I walked away from that thinking, I know lots of people that would not be able to do that, and they would have to just suffer through. And when you go to the dentist and it costs $100 to extract the tooth, versus any kind of repair or surgery that might be needed, which then can go up in terms of price. The policy that was announced makes me really, really proud. And knowing that it's on a pathway to universal dental care, I think is really important to remember as well. So as you say, it's free up to 18. Kids get looked after through schools and the help of mobile dental units and that. But between 18 and 30, what we know is that there's a huge drop off. The second it's no longer free and people realise how expensive dental care is in New Zealand, they stop going. Yeah. And so then that leads to, obviously, knock-on problems. So a really important policy. I'm proud of it. I'm actually off to a local dentist this morning here in Whakatane to talk about the policy and just to try and understand what, you know, dentists, practitioners such as himself are thinking about this policy and where they might see opportunities, but also challenges as well, because already it's been raised about where all these extra dentists are going to come from. I want to have those kinds of conversations to make sure that this dental policy lands well, because it's really important.
And we shouldn't have any trouble finding more dentists. We have a dental school in Aotearoa, but our dentists get their qualifications here and then go off overseas because there isn't the work. And so now there's going to be the work. We've got everything in place to make it happen. And what I think about is the long-term impact of having a free dental service, which means no emergency extractions, no hospitalizations, more productivity because you're not stuck at home, you know, nursing a sore mouth, all things like that. Like, it's just everything about it is a win-win for everybody. And I'm excited by the idea of universal dental care, which is something I never actually thought we would ever have here, but I always wondered why we didn't have it here.
Because anybody that knows that's ever had a sore tooth in there, it takes you down. As much as getting knocked over by one of the illnesses that circulates around wintertime, if you've got a sore tooth, a dodgy tooth, it can be the bane of your working week, of your working month. And actually what we know is that people just, they grin and bear it. They fill themselves up on painkillers and they seek out home remedies as well to try and avoid the inevitable cost of having to go to the dentist. So yeah, being able to step up on this is really important for me, and actually just another reminder of why I'm with the Labour Party, because these kind of policies definitely affect the people that, you know, that I represent.
I really liked that. I think that there has to be more policies like that come out that are really centred on the well-being of people. And I really liked that about Grant Robertson as a, I mean, Michael Cullen was like that anyway, like focused on well-being and what was best for the well-being of everybody in the country. But he didn't necessarily name it as that, although, you know, bringing in KiwiSaver and cool stuff like that, that was that in action. But then we've had Grant Robertson actually naming it a well-being budget and focused on well-being and how do we make sure people are well and happy. And I just feel kind of proud that we have that kind of leadership in our country.
Yep. And long may it rain. Yeah. Hey, I'm paid to say that. I've got to say that.
Tamati, what's the... We could come up with 1,000, probably 10,000 good ideas, which we can only afford a few of.
Yeah.
How does a thing like dental bubble to the surface?
Oh, through through the inner workings of the party is a really good start. So this has been something that Labour Party members have been pushing for quite some time. And as you say, when you get a bunch of Labour Party boffins in the same room, everybody wants something. And dental care is actually something that's been talked about behind the scenes in our Labour Party conferences, at our regional conferences, at our little community meetings that we have for a very long time. So it is an idea that's time has come, and I'm pleased about that. That's probably the first way that those ideas bubble up. When it's mirrored by what you're hearing in the community about how we can help support families through especially what we're going through at the moment, which is a pretty significant cost of living pressure that we're experiencing, these kinds of initiatives add up. So if you're talking about things like dental, if you're talking about things like GST off fruit and vegetables, the $5 part prescription payments, all of these are different. The food in schools that we have available right across the country now, not to every kid, but actually in a more targeted way. These are ways that we're able to save families a little bit in their pocket. And we in the Labour Party believe that that's a better option than just universal tax cuts for millionaires.
Bubble sprite of the forest of Orokanui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nga mihi arohano kia koutou, ko tahua hou. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day, who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very tough, and it's so important that we give ourselves and each other the time, the space, the love, the care that we all deserve and that we all need. And it's so important that we find ways in our day to day, in our day to night, in our night to day, to put in place ways to care for ourselves and each other that help us to put into perspective all of the changes that have taken place over the last several years, and indeed throughout our lives, internally and externally. And I know for myself, I've been so grateful and I've really benefited from being part of this show. So a huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team, having the opportunity to express and conceptualize my thoughts in a way that I hope can be helpful, has been immensely helpful for me. So I'm very honoured that I'm going to be emceeing the suicide prevention event, the World Suicide Prevention event, which is on Friday. And this will be an opportunity for the community to come together and share. and hear from some amazing, inspiring speakers at Knox Church, the beautiful Knox Church in Aughty-Porty, Stunedin. And it's also an opportunity for people to light a candle for their loved ones and place a special memory leaf on a beautiful ornamental tree. So it's going to be a really, really special ceremony and event. So I'm very honoured to be in the position to celebrate the lives of those we love together and also share some of the stories that people are feeling they would like to share. And of course, this gets me thinking about our day-to-day lives, how we can be really tuning in with ourselves and one another and checking in and just making sure that we really are taking the time to listen to ourselves and to each other and indeed find ways to, with each action in our day, if we can take the opportunity to slow things down a little bit and give ourselves a little bit more time and a little bit more space to experience what we're doing. This can make all the difference in the world, and it can transform what has been quite a mundane activity into a form of ritual and self-celebration, self-love, self-care. And I've been on this earth now for 37 years. It's taken me a long time to enjoy housework, but I'm finally at a point where these very simple acts of cleaning and tidying the house bring me immense pleasure and a real sense of homecoming and connection with my home space, both internally and externally. And it has become a series of rituals for me to make the house beautiful, and each day it renews my sense of hope and purpose and connection. So I really hope for you, you can find these simple ways, and of course it's different for everybody, to find these moments within your everyday to reconnect with yourself, where you are going, where you have been, who you are, and how you want that to expand and blossom. And it's a real pleasure and privilege to speak with you in this space, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to A Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Tamati Kothi.
Tamati, can you talk us through how policy kind of gets kicked off? What's the beginning of changing policy in the Labor Party?
Oh, sure. So within the Labor Party, we have our own organisational structure where somebody with an idea can present to their local Labor Committee that idea, and their Labor Committee can support it and approve it. And they usually toss it around at one of the local Labor Party meetings. And then if it gets the sign-off from the local committee, it then gets passed up to a regional conference of Labor Party members where we all get together in the same room and we battle it out for policy, and we have good, robust debates. And there's often, if you can visualise, two microphones on the side of the room. One is for the yes people, the people that agree with the policy in front of the room, and the other microphone is the no, the ones that don't agree. And we can have long lines at both, and everybody's given an opportunity to front up and to speak to the that policy idea, along with a host of other ideas that have come up through other local Labor committees. And then if it gets the sign-off from the region, it then gets hit up to the annual conference, where the same process happens again, but in front of all of the Labor committees from all across the country. And you, again, have a yes mic and a no microphone, and you get up there and you hit your point and you hope that it lands. And if it becomes supported by the conference, then that gets kicked up to the Policy Council of the New Zealand Labor Party, and ultimately the manifesto. And the manifesto are a collection of the promises that we intend to make upon becoming government. And that's the stuff that we take out onto the campaign trail. So I can use my own example on that, which is the work that I've been doing in the surrogacy space. started as a remit from me, because I was experiencing this. I realized other people were in the same boat. I got the support along the chain of command to be able to progress it, and it made the manifesto. So the second Labour became the government. The relevant spokespeople for those areas, in my case, the Minister of Justice, was given the Labour manifesto and said, here you go. Here's what Labour Party members have campaigned on, and this is now your job to turn this into reality. And that's how change is made. And so it's beautiful for me to understand that process and to be able to share that process, because it also means that if anybody ever wants to join and you think that you've got an idea and you think that your idea is robust enough to be able to make it through the different layers of robustness, then, you know, that's democracy in action as far as I'm concerned. Now, that's only internally, that's within the party. Externally, if you're not a member, then, you know, there are other avenues that you can take. You can create a kind of a lobby group or a pressure group to collectivise, to put a plan in place to try and lobby those ministers or those spokespeople or those political parties to take on your ideas, and even to take petitions to Parliament. So those are externally ways that change can happen. But internally, I've just given you the secrets to how to make change from within.
And having been involved in that petition process when we had the Māori Wards Bill introduced, for Jack at that time, he was about maybe 9 years old, and he stood on the steps of the Parliament holding the kite that held 13,000 signatures who've supported having Māori Wards established in our local government. Being involved in that process and seeing the power of the individual or a collective of individuals to actually affect positive change, it was mind-blowing and actually not that complicated.
No, not that complicated at all. And people have been bringing petitions to Parliament for a long time. Where the magic really happens is where those kinds of petitions come to Parliament and they're mirrored by internal support from the governing party, in this case, the Labour Party. And when you bring those together, change can happen, and often it's a mandate to drive it through harder and faster. So the Māori Wards was an example of that. And, you know, just to show the difference, the National ACT opposition have already said that they'll disestablish them around the country and take away that representation around decision-making council tables, who many for the first time are seeing brown faces around the table and trying to adjust what that means for them. I think it's a great step forward. But there are some people out there that think that it's a huge step back. And there are 66 new Māori ward councillors off the back of the 2022 local body elections. And, you know, I can't speak highly enough about the gains and capability that that's making amongst whānau Māori, iwi Māori, hapu Māori around the country, finally having a say around those tables, which for a long time have been locked up, for want of a better term.
Does that attitude of National and ACT, where they want to take away that representation that we fought so hard for, that's making such a positive difference, does that show that we still have a lot of racism in our country?
It shows that, I don't know, does it show that, or does it just show that it's politicians being political? And that for every perspective, there's an alternative position. And, you know, in an election year, they come out and they just, you know, it's easy for them to try and pick up some votes for those people that are feeling affected by this and just playing politics with it. I'm not 100% sure, because, you know, I know people in some of those parties that are supportive. They are supportive of Māori wards, of co-governance and co-management arrangements. It was the National Party that started co-governance arrangements when they were last in government. So I know that there are people within their parties that don't think like that. But if for some reason or another they want to take this very political stand, then I hope that they face the consequences of that, and that people who do believe in partnerships, meaningful partnerships with Māori up and down the country, hear that, understand that, and vote accordingly.
Let's squeeze in the second of your music choices. Let's have Herbs, Sensitive to a Smile. Why this one?
Because it talks about smiling, and we've just released our dental policy, and I think that everybody should be able to smile. And I think of one of my aunties who needs significant dental work, and whenever she goes to smile, she has to, this is how she smiles, and she hides behind her hand because she feels embarrassed about her teeth and what they look like. And so I think of my auntie and I think of our dental policy. So yeah, that's why. Oh, and it's herbs. And it's herbs, which are a good homegrown Kiwi band.
When we talked to you last time, I think I asked you what got you into politics, and you said something along the lines of making a difference or making positive change happen. Scale of 1 to 10, have you done it?
Have I done it? have I done it? Yes, yes is the little lonely voice in the background, but you know what, it's a question that you have to keep asking yourself. In fact, I know MPs that have got a sign on the back of their door in their offices which say, "Have you made a difference today?" Yes, you can think about it on an election cycle term, or, you know, I've had 6 years now. I believe I have made a difference in advocating for people on the ground who, you know, would never find themselves in parliament or would never feel comfortable talking to politicians about issues that affect them. I feel as though I've been a good, strong advocate for lots of people, lots of different community groups. Is there more work to do? Of course there is. And I reflect back on Jacinda's goodbye speech, where she talked about some of the big issues that she wanted to help tackle, mental health, climate change, and she resolved that actually some of these issues, as much as she's wanted to make a difference and she did as much as she could, they're things that won't be solved in our parliamentary term and possibly even our generation. It's something that carries on past us.
We're not allowed to explicitly talk about the election process, but we can talk about what's going on between now and then. How are you planning on running it? You've got an enormous electorate.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, I've been an MP for the Wairakei region for the last 6 years. It covers the same kind of footprint as the East Coast electorate, and I know half of it very well because everywhere from Maketu to Whangaparawa up at the East Cape down to the Uriwetas, I've tread those paddocks and I've driven those roads for quite some time. Over on the Tairāwhiti side, a slightly different story, but I've got good whakapapa links which connect me over onto that side. And just, you know, I see it as kind of 2 months. We've got four weeks out there on the campaign trail, of which we're in week number one right now. Getting around there, going to places where people are, going to the candidate debates, but also I believe that politics is also one on the side of the rugby field and also at the side of the netball courts when families are there supporting their kids. They don't want to come to dusty old community halls anymore and talk politics. Many of them want to talk about it in their places and spaces. So I'll be focused on getting out there and talking to people about the issues that affect them, whether it's on the Gisborne side or the Eastern Bay side. My job is just getting out there.
And lots of cups of tea.
I'm kicking off a campaign called 1,000 Cups, and my goal is to utilize those more intimate moments, actually, to talk politics, because some people don't feel comfortable, as I said, in big public forums discussing issues. So I've put a link on my Facebook, on my Insta page, where I've said, if you want to come and join me for a cup. I have my own cup. I can bring my own cup and I'll bring a couple of extras and maybe some biscuits. But I'm happy to come and talk to community organisations, sports groups, or just you and, you know, a bunch of friends around your kitchen table about the issues that matter to you. Because my grandmother used to say that there's no problem too big that couldn't be sorted with a nice cup of tea and a sit down. So that's what I'm looking forward to. And already the invite has gone out. The diary is filling up with lots of people. So if you are an East Coast voter, if you're in this electorate and you want to reach out to have a cup of tea with me, pull together a bunch of friends at your place, I'm happy to schedule that in. But there are limited spaces because there's only a certain amount of time between now and election day. So if you're keen on sending the invite, then get in fast.
Are you documenting these cups of tea?
Yes, with photos. And I've already got a few photos to post up, and I'll be doing that. But yes, I'll be documenting that along the way on my social media.
I have some questions to end the show. We've had these before, but we'll ask them again. We don't have much time, so nice and quick. What's the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
My own personal success has actually been the work that I've done in the surrogacy space. That's been a really interesting space to be able to navigate, but to get that to a point now where it's ready to be turned into legislation and affect the lives of future families that can't have kids, gay and straight, I think will be my own personal legacy. In terms of being an MP, I think helping our communities through COVID response and advocating to the point where now we can look over our shoulder quite proudly and say, we came, we saw, we got the T-shirt, and now we're saying goodbye to it. It's now no longer a thing in our lives.
What's your superpower?
I think it's approachability. I think that's my superpower. I kind of jump between you know, wherever I am, people feel confident in being able to come up and talk to me. And that's a superpower that I think many of my parliamentary colleagues would love to have. Half of them actually struggle being recognised by some of their constituents. I don't face that problem. My problem is trying to get away from them when they've been bending my ear as I'm trying to do my shopping at Pack and Save, or I'm trying to just fill up my car and just get to my next appointment and they want to stop and have a deep and meaningful conversation. But it's a gift and a curse, but I'll take it as a gift.
You must have a very clever way of extricating yourself, but still making people feel valued.
Yeah, absolutely. And often the truth is very important. If you actually just say to them, look, I'm 10 minutes late already for a meeting that I was due at. I would love to finish this conversation, but I can't right now. You know, Kiwis are pretty generous with their time and understand that.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
Yeah, I am. And I think that some people get put off by that because they think that I'm just that happy, smiley weather guy, the funny Māori that likes playing the guitar at the parties, and I'm that as well, but also inside me I've got a real sense of social justice and wanting to make the world a better place.
So what motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
More recently, my kids. When you become a new dad, you start seeing the world through slightly different eyes, and you start thinking less about yourself and more about what the future holds for your children, and wanting to make that the best place that it can be. So they are the ones that get me out of bed, both holistically and sometimes physically too, when they decide that it's time to get up and my four-year-old decides that he wants to jump on my head to get me out of bed. That's a very real thing.
That will do it. Might be an obvious answer to this question, but what's the biggest challenge that you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
Well, the immediate challenge is just getting through the campaign period and obviously the election. There's no bigger test, really, than standing for public office in a general election campaign. You put everything on the line for it. You challenge yourself. You challenge your stamina. You challenge your patience. You challenge your mind as well. And for the immediate future, actually, it's just getting through the election. But on the other side of that, it'll be delivering and the execution of all of the promises that you go out there on the campaign trail and you make, because best laid plans can sometimes fail at implementation. So making sure that you're delivering on those things that you set out to do will be the next biggest challenge after the election.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
If you want to get involved, get involved. It is an exciting time, and for anybody that feels passionately about a particular issue, you know, whatever your party is, and you know, this is where I put down my own personal colours, whatever your party is, just get involved. It's an exhilarating thing to be part of. I have this machine of people in the East Coast electorate that are scattered all around the place, and they put up billboards, they hand up pamphlets, they join me at public events, and it's really... it's an exciting time, you know. It's our version of the Olympics for policy boffins and political geeks. So if you want to get involved, it's as easy as going to your party's website, the party that best aligns with you, and clicking the Join Now button. You then get invites to whatever's going on. And it doesn't compare to the other years where it's not the campaign period time. This time is a time that you can really get involved. Of course, I'm going to say join up to Labour. And if you're in the East Coast electorate, please be one of my volunteers. We cannot have enough.
Thank you very much. Mawira.
Tamati, I've known you for a long time. And I remember the very first day I met you, you walked into, it was at REAP in Whakatane, and you walked into the room and your sunshine filled the room. And it's like that every time I see you, your sunshine fills spaces. I've seen you work so hard for so many people without the need for trumpets and fanfare. You just get on with it and you change lives. And I'm so thankful that we get to have you in our community and appreciate you for all the things I know you do that don't make the headlines because you don't require them to. You just do the work. Thank you for everything. And I look forward to seeing you at your movie fundraiser tonight.
Hey. Thank you, Mawira. Thanks, Sam. Thank you.
Is one cup of tea ever enough? Let's find out. I love a nice hot cuppa, it really satisfies me. Before I sip, I tend to blow to cool the liquid slightly. I can't think of a drink that can so refresh me, but all too soon it's down my throat and I'm staring at an empty. Time for a top up, that all important second cup. But after an initial sip, I lose interest in it. I'll dunk a biscuit, better not, I've had a few already. Suddenly my thirst has gone and the mug is getting heavy.
All their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens Team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic Te Pūkenga. We broadcast on Otago Access Radio Wednesday afternoons at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.nz. Facebook, I've searched for answers to this conundrum, this is but I can't find any.
One cup of tea is never enough, and two is one too many.
I'm Tammy Mann, Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, with Mawira Karatai in Whakatane, and we've been joined by Tamati Coffee. Well, that was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Mātiwa. I'm heading